Several years ago, Rose and I took a trip to northwestern Michigan on the other side of the state from where I grew up. And we stayed in this bed and breakfast near Traverse City and drove up the Leelanau Peninsula to go wine tasting. Now, while the region is well known for its cherries, producing 74% of the country's tart cherries, it also grows some pretty excellent grapes and some amazing wines. The Leelanau Peninsula is particularly good for reds. And we drove up one side of that peninsula and went up toward the tip, stopping at these small stands and storefronts. And some looked like these country stores, and others, like Leelanau Wine Cellars and Black Star Farms, were big operations. They felt big. And on the way back down, we stopped at three that were all pretty close together, inland a little bit. Saccone Vineyard and Winery, which is owned by Madonna's father, was a simple field with grapes, right? And then there was a little shackish storefront. And go in, and they sold wines and, of course, Madonna-themed merchandise. Our last two stops were at Willow Vineyard and Shady Lane Cellars. Both of these felt like the vineyards you expect to see in California or Italy or France, right? They had these great, majestic, sloping fields with trellises of grapes hanging from them, right? And they both had this rustic character that gave it the sense not of age and oldness, but of a timeless presence in that spot, as if this winery that was 6 years old was 106 years old or 206 years old. And the Blue Franc at Shady Lane, by the way, was excellent. That's the one that I brought home with me. But this sense of the vineyard as a timeless, welcoming, hopeful place where everyone can come and learn and taste and create a temporary community is the true beauty of the experience. And we also learned while we were there that there is a bit of a fight happening in the industry in that area between this vision of wineries as communities and then another, the one of shameless commerce and exploiting tourists, like myself. The kind of vineyard Jesus describes in this morning's parable doesn't sound like those places of sharing and opportunity or even that corporate expansion I experienced. I mean, recall now in your own vision you have of a vineyard and winery, right? Perhaps like mine, it's a vision of those sloping hills revealing delicate grapes that are dangling from fragile plants. Or maybe we've seen vineyards ourselves from our own experience, or we would call them the depicted in the multiple masterworks of the last 500 years of art, right? When we imagine vineyards, we draw on these paintings of Italy and France generally, with hills who roll and steps parade the vineyards into the fields. And we see houses among the fields, right? It's all dappled with sunlight, a pastoral landscape. Take that image, the one that we all have, and hear Jesus' description over that. There was a landowner who planted a vineyard, put a fence around it, dug a wine press in it, and built a watchtower. Now, this image doesn't make me think of a vineyard, but a prison with forced labor in the middle of it. Then he leased it to tenants and went to another country. Now, while tenants are the same as slaves, of course, our own fragile moral standing on that distinction belies any real difference. Remember, after the Civil War, many tenant farmers were as good as slaves and as trapped in that life. When the harvest time had come, he sent his slaves to the tenants to collect his produce, so he didn't even go himself. The whole setup of the story gives a sinister framework. While it would seem we should take the vile behavior of the tenants the same way the Pharisees do at the end, I think we should, as a condemnation of their own behavior, it would also seem that we should be careful in praising this absent landowner, because the whole thing smells rotten and sour. The gospel stories we've had the last 2 weeks might help us get at what's so hinky about this story, right? Because these parables are part of a bigger story, remember? So we're in chapter 21 of the gospel we call Matthew. And this chapter begins with Jesus's triumphal entry, the mock triumphal entry, riding on a donkey to mock Rome, right? And Jesus then drives the temple's commerce to a halt and then goes back the very next day to teach in it, right? And what he teaches is about authority and action. He's being confronted by the temple's leaders about all the stuff he's doing. I mean, he's put them in a hard place. They're scared of Rome and Jesus' crowds. They're trapped between these two. So they try to get Jesus to back down, calm the situation down. We don't want anyone dead here. And Jesus' response is with a teaching about action, in arguing that the good one is the one who does what God wants rather than the one who simply says what they think God wants to hear. And this leads us right into the parable today. That's what we're wrestling with. But if we jump back one chapter to 20, before they get to Jerusalem, like we did 2 weeks ago, right? When Jesus is talking to his followers, he tells a different parable about a different landowner, right? One who keeps hiring and hiring and hiring because there are so many people without work. He keeps finding more people to hire, right? Now, think about these two images, both of vineyards, and they're two parables and our two audiences for them. Jesus gives his followers a picture of the kingdom of heaven, and he gives his temple authorities a picture of the kingdom of earth. Isn't this fantastic? These two things, these two to play off of each other, right? We're offered two landowners and two vineyards, two visions of creation, right? And in the one, we see this generous landowner who's fair, cares for everyone, and makes sure every person he or she meets will have food that day. And the other is absent, angry, and arrogant. He owns the lives of the slaves and tenants alike, and yet demands respect when he shows little to them. Right? Even the juxtaposing of the workers is telling, right? One day has laborers who negotiate a fair wage before they set off to work. Right? And the other has tenants who act wickedly, beating and killing the slaves sent to collect the produce. If we tug at these two images just a little bit more, we can see another telling wrinkle in it. The energies of conflict in the parable of the generous landowner come from the worker's expectations, right? Not from what the landowner offers. They expect that merit will lead to a bonus rather than such generosity ensuring all are fed. The landowner's generosity and sense of generous equality confuses them. But the tension in this parable today is built around this prison-like conditions and the wicked selfishness of the tenants. They believe they can claim the vineyard for themselves if they kill the the landowner's son. Two defiant parties who think selfishness can save them here, right? We wouldn't strain logic to see how the owner's selfishness affects the tenants. Not only is the landowner's absence felt, but these cruel conditions make the tenants feel like slaves, even if they aren't. He exploits them like they seek to exploit him. This isn't a picture of God. It's about how things are, right? And could be. A kingdom of heaven and a kingdom of earth. It's easy to see the kingdom of earth around us, isn't it? This kingdom's hallmarks are selfishness and brutality. The kingdom of earth is violent, abusive, and obsessed with power. It seeks to dominate and control. It wants everything in order and without exception. Right? But most of all, it wants to exploit and steal. And the people of this kingdom want to possess more than their neighbors possess. I heard this week a different parable, a modern parable, about an angel who comes to a person and he says, "Oh, I will give you whatever you want. Give you your heart's desire." And the person starts thinking, starts getting some really good ideas. He's trying to narrow down that heart's desire. But before he could speak, the angel says, "Oh, and it gets better. I will offer your neighbor twice that." And the person says immediately, "Then take my eye." People of the kingdom of earth want the biggest and the best vineyard and winery, and it comes at the expense of their neighbors. They'll take shortcuts to cheapen their wine and maximize their profits. Hosts will hook their people into buying their wares as souvenirs, and workers will be paid as cheaply as possible. Of course, letting the market drive down their wages, right? That's the thing. Ultimately, these hallmarks reveal a culture of isolation and loneliness. That is what such selfishness does to us. When we want what we want, we don't get what we want. And we deprive our neighbors and ultimately ourselves of what's most important: community and intimacy. And love. Because that doesn't sound at all like God. It's so unlike a God of generosity who ensures fairness, hospitality, and a truly generous heart to us. In the aftermath of tragedies like we had last weekend, the rigidity of our hearts and the fear we foster toward our neighbors intoxicates our souls. We start to think that murder for murderers is good and just, or that the tyranny of a dystopian dream is inevitable. We look at this world with the eyes of the tenant or the rigidity of the landowner. That is, if we choose to accept that kingdom of earth. But Jesus keeps prodding us over and over to re-examine our reality, right? To, not to mix my metaphors too much, but to peek behind the curtain to see the hollow man is no wizard at all, that he is not actually God. And this is not the picture of God's kingdom at all. For that, we follow Jesus. He shows us the real God. We follow Jesus on the road which leads to God's true kingdom. It's a pathway free of fences, save the ones holding grapes, ripe to bursting. And at the end of that path is a small wooden building with an open door. And he motions us to come in and make new friends of those visiting from all over the world in this one place. And here we learn, share our stories, and are welcome to stay as long as we like. But first, we'll pass around the bread, perfectly paired with the table wine.